What's up, everyone? This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our previous recordings are available on all major podcast platforms. Just look or search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast, as well as our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All right, so now that the NFL 2021 season has been complete, obviously looking forward to playoffs coming up here this upcoming weekend. But first things first, how about that national championship game last night between Alabama and Georgia? What were your thoughts on the ending of that game?
Well, finally, Nick Saban doesn't win one. So that's always good, right? It's one of those where I thought Alabama was going to win, but glad Georgia did. A lot of speed, a lot of hard hits. You wish several NFL teams played the way both of those teams play. So it was just a good game. Definitely a defensive struggle for the most part. And again, right at the end of the day, I'm just glad someone else won to keep somewhat of a parity set up in college football. I know it's always Bama and somebody else, but I was glad to see Georgia finally win one. It's been, 41 years since they had won a championship?
Yeah, 31.
So.
Yeah, that was like I said, I wasn't kind of expecting that too. I mean, obviously, I would say most people probably predicted Alabama to win that. But obviously, going into the game, I think everyone kind of thought it would be at least a close game, which it was. I mean, for the most part, no one really scored a touchdown to win. When was the first touchdown? Was it second or third quarter?
Late third, mid to late, right?
Right, which was really surprising too, as well. And then I almost thought it was going to, and we'll actually talk about this other game later, but I almost thought that it was going to end up like the Sunday night Raiders and Chargers game there in the end. And then I didn't know what Bryce Young was thinking on that one pass that ended up being an interception that returned for the house for Georgia. But I thought it was some
communication.
Close. Right.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, for myself who loves the NFL draft, there were so many prospects in this game. I mean, Georgia alone, their defense has anywhere from 2 to 4 potential first rounders. Bama has one for sure first rounder this year, maybe 2 other ones. And then they have the best defensive player in the nation and Will Anderson. Then you look at the offense on both sides, they probably have between 3 to 5 first rounders in the next year or so. So yeah, it was just cool to see that. And I'm sure we'll see a lot of those names called in April's draft. I really wanted, remember I kept telling you guys, I wanted the Chiefs to get N'Kobe Dean, the linebacker from Georgia, number 17.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that'll happen, right? Because we should hopefully have the 32nd pick, but and he should be gone by then. But if we do, then that'd be a heck of a pickup. Speedy linebacker to go with Bolton and Gay.
Yeah, that would be great to have him. It was funny when you mentioned him a few weeks back in our chat, and you said number 17 for Georgia. I don't know why I thought of this, because the first thing that pops in my mind, 17 from Georgia, is Hardman, because he went to Georgia, but he is actually number 4 there. So I like.
Right.
I thought when you mentioned that, I thought it was like an inside joke, but now I get what you're saying. After I've seen him play a couple times.
Yeah, and remember, McColl scored in the last national championship Georgia played in.
Yeah, sure did. So, like I said, it was good seeing some parity now and someone else beating Saban again. So. Alabama is going to reload, they'll probably definitely be back in the playoff again next year for sure. So it's not always never the end for them. Like I said, definitely good seeing Georgia and even the state of Georgia, right? They had the Braves win the World Series and now, Georgia wins the, college football national championship. So, maybe that curse over in the state of Georgia might be over with now. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't see the Falcons winning anything.
Well, yeah. The Falcons maybe not, and the Hawks, yeah, they probably still don't have a chance either. So,
but they almost did, right? I mean, both the Hawks almost did, and Falcons almost did. Well, I mean, they had it won.
Yeah, it's true. Yep.
It's not bad to be a sports fan in Georgia, right?
Right. For right now, you're sitting pretty good for sure. So, obviously, we're going to recap the Chiefs Broncos last game of the season, Week 18. Which obviously if anyone watched it or saw the highlights, it was probably not a game that the Chiefs fans want to remember, at least for the most part. Towards the end, it ended up being actually, end up coming out with the win. But I will say probably most people had probably at that point were thinking, oh, look here, the Chiefs go again, you know, trying to blow in this game. But obviously we end up, you know, pulling out that victory 28-24. So I'll send it over to Rich for the box score of the game.
All right. So final score was Chiefs 28, Broncos 24. Chiefs end the season at 12-5, second ranked in the AFC, and the Broncos end 7-10, missing the playoffs once again. Heading into the numbers for each team, I'll start off with the Chiefs. Total yards for them was 390. In the air was 255. On the ground was 135. For the Broncos, 364 total, 173 in the air, 191 on the ground. Turnovers, none for the Chiefs, one for the Broncos. I'm sure you know which one that is. And then the time of possession, Chiefs led the way at 33:04, 26:56 for the Broncos. Into the individual stat column, Patrick Mahomes was 27 of 44, 270, two touchdowns, got sacked once, and that left him at a rating of 93.9. Drew Lock was 12 of 24, 162, no touchdowns, no interceptions in the air, one sack, and his passer rating was 71.9. And then I'll keep going there with the rushing number. So Drew Lock had two touchdowns for 35 yards on the ground. And Javonte Williams was 12 carries, 46 yards, while Melvin Gordon was 12 carries, 110 yards, and one touchdown. And then for the Chiefs on the ground, definitely a few folks that got carries, including Patrick, leading the way for the team on the ground. So Patrick's numbers on the ground were 9 for 54. Derek Gore was 7 for 30. Jared McKinnon was 5 for 24. And Jaren Williams was 7 for 17. And then last but not least, we'll talk offensively about the numbers in the air. McColl led the way with 8 receptions for 103 yards, followed by Byron Pringle with 5 for 56. And then for the Broncos, the leading receiver was Tim Patrick, 6 for 95. Last two things I'll call out here is the top tackle getters for each team were for the Broncos, Michael Ojemudia, with 11 combined tackles, and as well as Caden Stearns with 9 and a few other folks. With about 8 and 6, respectively. For the Chiefs, Nick Bolton and Legarius Sneed led the way in the tackle column. And then Shelby Harris and Derek Nnadi split sacks for the Chiefs and for the Broncos. I think we all know who the turnover was and who caused the turnover and who recovered it, right? Melvin Ingram with the calls.
Mm-hmm.
Turnover on Melvin Gordon. I know that's probably going to be a tongue twister for you a little bit later. But then Nick Bolton with the fumble recovery and the touchdown there. So, yep, that is what it looks like from a stats perspective.
All right. So as far as on the injury report from the game, not really much to speak of. I mean, obviously, Kelce had that injury the last play of the game for the Chiefs. Tyreek had that heel injury that he kind of struggled with most of the game. And Darrell Williams, I believe, went out in the second quarter with the toe injury. And even Pringle got banged up there, I think, late there in the third quarter. But from what Andy Reid said, at least yesterday, he said that everyone seems to be okay or fine heading into the playoffs. We'll see about Tyreek Hill and the heel injury because of, you know, his, you know, you know, is it with the speed and how fast he is, you know, that heel injury could be a factor going forward. So we'll see actually how healthy that one is. But as far as any other injury report-related news for the Chiefs, does look like Clyde Edwards-Helaire will probably be hitting the field sometime this week, anticipating on playing this upcoming Sunday against the Steelers. Wait to see, but that's what Andrew says, that he looks like he might be. Give it a go this week, probably maybe on a limited snap count, who knows, but that could be a good sign of getting him back, even though it looks like, you know, obviously Darrell Williams and Derek Gore and even Jarrett McKinnon has been playing pretty well since he's been out. So we'll have to see if he will end up, if Clyde Edwards Clyde Edwards-Helaire will end up playing on Sunday. As far as some of the high-level players from the game, really don't have a whole lot. I'll kind of go over a few here. I have the one of them I have is the fourth and one that Patrick threw to Tyreek Hill about 2 minutes left in the third quarter. And it's the famous fourth and one play that the Chiefs have called, I believe, three times now since last year when Chad Henne threw it to Tyreek Hill in that Cleveland Browns game to seal the victory for the Chiefs to go to the AFC Championship game. But it's an interesting play because it seems like it works every time. Like, I don't think we've ran that play and like Hill hasn't dropped it or something hasn't gone wrong. Like, it's worked every time, but for some reason defense have not keyed in on that. It's always been on a fourth and one too. I don't think we've done it on a third and one. So it's funny how the defenses haven't caught on to that yet. But I don't think we'll probably be, you know, hopefully not running that too much more, especially on fourth down, because that could be something if any defense looks at the tape that they'll probably see that for sure. And then obviously I have Patrick Mahomes on here, some high level plays. I kind of just clumped these all together because he had 9 runs for 54 yards, along as being 25. He had some really nice runs in this game, which is weird to say that. And obviously, I think Rich, if I'm not mistaken, he's led the team in rushing like at least what 5 or 6 games this year, if not more.
Yeah, I definitely have to go back and look. I know he did this week.
Right. So he's, obviously it's, you know, him being mindful of the field, seeing that obviously there's nobody open, and there's the hole for him to run the ball, and whatnot. So, like I said, he's doing his job, you know, making sure we're getting the ball down the field, whether it's, you know, him finding someone open or him just using his legs and getting the first down or, getting some yards to keep the drive moving. So, kudos for him for, you know, still be able to do that. And then as lastly, I have the Jarrett McKinnon 14-yard touchdown catch and run. Looked like he had a couple spin moves in there and then kind of drove his body into the runner on the 1-yard line to get in the end zone. I thought that was pretty nice.
Yeah, definitely looked like he was really good with the analog sticks on Madden there.
Yeah, I thought myself, you sit there, you could probably put a controller up there on the screen and you'd sit there and like, all right, joystick to the left and then, you know, hit circle for the spin. Yeah. So that was pretty good. That was a pretty good place. But did you have any other ones outside of those?
No. I really like that Jarrett McKinnon play. I mean, it's just cool to see those because you don't see those much now. Players are so wide open that they have to fight for yards like that. So that was a pretty good play.
Yep, for sure. And it's good to see, McKinnon getting a little bit more time there in the game because obviously Williams went down. So all he had really at that point was he had Gore and McKinnon, so he got a lot of time, especially there in the fourth quarter too as well. So he got good to see some action from him for sure. So as far as the game ball, I went with – you could probably went with maybe a couple different people, maybe even especially on the defense, which I think is what you're going to have, Rich. But I went with Mecole Hardman. He had one carry for 10 yards, which was a pretty good run. And he also had 8 catches for 103 yards, including the 44-yard catch and run he had in the fourth quarter on that last drive. But I thought he looked pretty impressive. Like, if I'm not mistaken, all the balls that were thrown his way, he caught. Because I'm not sure. I believe he had just 8 targets, if I'm not mistaken. He had 11 targets. But all the balls are actually right in his hands anyways, I will say. He actually caught, and he had a pretty nice game. So it's good to see him kind of step up in that role when, obviously, Tyreek played, minimum of the game with that heel injury, and Kelsey didn't really have, you know, a huge game too as well. So other than that touchdown, so it was good to see Mecole Hardman have that nice game, and obviously, I think he deserved part of the game ball for this game. What about you, Rich?
Well, I mean, and I'll just comment on Mecole. Right before giving you my game ball, is one thing about him, right, is his speed. We all know from, you know, his Georgia days till now, the guy, when he gets the ball in his hands, he could break it just like Tyreek can, right? And there were a few where if he would just break that last tackle, he would have been gone. So, yeah, it was really good to see him get his hands constantly on the ball and just have good opportunities to make plays. And it's like, I wish he would have broken one because, you know, he deserves it. And maybe it's that confidence builder. I think 2 to 3 games this year, he's kind of been on the cusp of just having a breakout game. So, yeah, it would have been nice. But, I mean, he's still making plays and did what he was supposed to do when the ball was thrown his way. So, all right. Well, getting into my game ball, I'm going to give it to number 24, Melvin Ingram. He has not only just been a game changer on defense for us since we acquired him, but even in this game, a lot of the things he does maybe aren't in the major stat columns that everyone looks at, but he has a constant impact on the game, whether it's rushing the passer or stopping the run. And as that play he made there to basically help us seal the game there at the end, just the timing of it, the form on the tackle, the hit on his former San Diego Charger teammate, because that is when they were San Diego, right? Not Los Angeles.
Right. Yeah.
Nick Bolton's awareness right after that to run it a really, really far distance for a linebacker. So, yeah, my game ball goes to Melvin Ingram.
And that would probably have been my other suggestion, too, is I just really thought that he, like you said, since he's joined the team, he's just played outstanding. Our defense has looked way different since he's been on a team, too, as well. And he's just had an impactful game. Obviously against the Broncos. So that's a good game ball to have too, as well from this game. So then the player that disappointed, I'm going to go a little bit a different direction. As far as I'm going with special teams this time, but not just special teams. I'm going to go with, number 39. I can't remember it. I know his last name is Anderson. I didn't even get to look up. I want to say it's like Xavier Anderson or whatnot, but he's only really been a fill in on special teams since, Chris Lamont's been put on IR because he was the guy that's basically that same spot that what Anderson's been taking over for. And he's been obviously Lamont's was a great special teams guy before he got hurt. So, but he had that costly penalty, obviously, in this game, with that running into the punter, which if you really look at it, I mean, he was going for it all and he almost got it. Like, I mean, maybe another second or two, he probably would have had that punt blocked. But not only did that penalty happened. The Broncos, I thought at that point, got the momentum of the game, if you thought about it. They ended up scoring a touchdown off of that drive off the penalty. And from there on, up until probably, the Melvin Ingram, Nick Bolton play, which I'll actually talk about here in a second too as well. Probably up until then, that's when the Broncos had all the momentum of the game, I thought. From there on. So, and then obviously he had that penalty last week that was a block in the back, and that happens all the time. So you can't really complain, about that. But if you look at the game though, that could have been a key play too. If we got that touchdown, or even I know Tyreek Hill dropped that pass right after, could have gotten at least 3 points, the first half of the Bengals game as well. But, I just put Anderson on there just because, I mean, that was kind of, it happened, but I feel like he was the one out of this game that kind of disappointed me the most. What about you, Rich?
So mine is, I think we were laughing about it right beforehand. Mine's a little bit different, a little bit interesting. I'm going to say disappointed in Andy Reid's decision to leave Tyreek Hill out there for as long as he did with the condition of his leg, ankle, knee, whatever it was. They said it was an ankle, but I think he had no business being out there. I get that a player may want to be out there helping his team, but in that situation, win or lose, I get we could have gone from the second to the fourth seed, but still protect Tyreek Hill, give him that whole week to rest up, which I guess he still gets, but that possibility of him getting hurt once again in a game. So I didn't like that. I get it, but like I said, I didn't like it. So that's who I'm going to pick on for this week.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, if you looked at the end of the game, I think at that point we were down to really just Robinson, Gordon, and Hardman, and then McKinnon for most part, there in the end of the game, because obviously Pringle, had gotten hurt. Tyreek, like I said, played a little bit here and there, but as far as on that injury concern, I just didn't see why I needed to bring him in there too. Like you said, players like to play in moments, regardless if they're hurt a little bit or not. But I agree. I don't think that would have been really a smart move, because what happens if he made it worse or anything like that? Because heel injuries could lead into what, like a heel pointer or something like really even more severe, I think. Into that, obviously, we saw, you know, Eric Berry had that one injury. I mean, it might be a little bit different from what we're talking about here, but, you know, heel injuries are, especially for somebody that's like as fast as he is, those are injuries you don't want to see get worse, especially for one of your superstars.
Definitely. Very good point.
So, but yeah. So as far as our, or at least my favorite moment of the game, I think probably could be everyone's, but it's pretty much the obvious. It was the, you know, Melvin Ingram hitting Melvin Gordon when he got the ball there on that play, causing the fumble, which Nick Bolton picked up and ran the ball 86 yards for the touchdown, which pretty much changed the entirety of the game at that point, with the Chiefs scoring there and then getting the 2-point conversion, you know, to go up ahead there in that, at that point in the game there late in the fourth. But I do want to have your opinion on this is that, did you not think that it was kind of weird how Drew Locke didn't really try to tackle Nick Bolton at all? Or maybe he just was kind of confused of what was kind of going on, but his reaction wasn't really that great, I thought.
So that's funny you mention it, because in real time, I do remember seeing a very lackluster effort. Now, today, you know, not watching the game for a few hours again, because I watched it earlier, I can't remember exactly what he looked like. I wish I could pull it up. Do you remember like the exact time frame of that play, so I can pull it up real quick?
I don't, but no, yeah,
I mean, I do remember, like you said, right? I guess, let me see. YouTube has a pretty quick clip. I do remember being like, why the hell is he not just running faster with more effort?
Yeah.
So maybe it's a, hey, you know, I'm a Kansas City kid. I don't know.
I just thought that
it's a Missouri guy.
Right. I just thought it was weird how he just like kind of just didn't really, didn't put a lot of effort into it. I mean, quarterbacks obviously don't normally do, but, you know, that's a big play right there. So
he made a business decision is how they say it.
So, I'm not really sure, to be honest.
Oh, so no, I just watched it, man. Yeah, that's a quarterback tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went and hugged him, and yeah, I'm pretty sure he made a business decision and said, that man probably weighs 20, 30 more pounds than I do.
Yep, I'm not trying to
if
get hurt.
If he goes down, yeah, I'm not going to.
Yeah, that's
I'm not going to wish being in the Broncos franchise, but he should have, so.
Right. So besides that, was there any other kind of like moments from the game that you figured you know, might would have stood out at all, or we pretty much kind of covered all of them?
So this was a moment that happened early on. Travis Kelce's touchdown. I think it was an amazing play call. I love those delayed, you know, or act like you're blocking and then drag across the field. You're wide open. I loved it. But what it did is it brought my attention to Travis Kelce has not been the same player since testing positive for COVID. Right. And I'm not here to be a scientist or a politician or debate on how all that stuff happens and what happens. But I mean, it could just be the defenses are playing really, really well, but he just always looks tired. And I know this year as a whole, he's still been great, right? He's still the best tight end in the game. The numbers are there to reflect it once again. But he just always looks really gassed. And he had that play, the touchdown. But then for the rest of the game, there weren't just many plays, or I'm sure his snap count was down. But, yeah, that's just one that I really like the play call. So, you know, praising that side of it, it was a really good play call, and I'm glad that, you know, it happened. But then, like I said, it just sparked the idea of he just hasn't been the same player since that situation. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Very good point. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because I felt like since Jarvarius Ward has gotten, since he got COVID, I feel like he's been
burnt like toast since then, huh?
Yeah, he hasn't played that well either. Obviously, I was going to say Mike Hughes, but I don't think he ever got put on the COVID list, but he's obviously struggled too. But no, as far as what you're saying is about some of these players that's had COVID and come back, I think you're right. I think you're looking at Kelce and Ward as being the two players that I've seen play a little bit different. Like I said, we don't know, you know, obviously, you know, different things related or whatnot, but are they, like I said, fatigued or what? But I feel like, yeah, those two players have not been the same since they've come back from the COVID list.
That's a really good point on Ward, because I didn't even think about that. So I'd have to go back and look at the timelines and see how they've been since.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So it's something to keep an eye on going forward and see, especially, like I said, we'll talk more about it later this week, but, you know, our playoff game against the Steelers on Sunday night. So it's something to look forward to and see, you know, if that's, you know, continuing to lingers on. But obviously, you know, I wouldn't hope that, especially on Kelsey's side, that they'll cut his snap count in the playoff game. But I understand maybe, like, obviously the last few games, you know, resting him up. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what continues on with that. So I have a last two topics for our episode today. First one being the Raiders-Chargers wild Sunday night game. And when we say wild, we mean wild, because we're sitting here all watching it, obviously in our chat and everything that we had going on, you know, talking back and forth. And, you know, the Raiders are sitting there. Or was it not the Raiders? I'm sorry. It was the Chargers were sitting down, 15 points, I believe, there in the fourth quarter. And it's just odd how everything kept – both drives, but I know the last drive of the game, I cannot recall seeing so many fourth downs.
Exactly.
It's weird, because it's like, you know, first, second, and third, it'd either be like you know, the Chargers would throw in a pass and it would just, you know, be dropped. Or Herbert would throw a pass and just, you know, wouldn't be on target. And then on fourth down, all of a sudden magically happens. Somebody will catch it or they get the first down. And three or four fourth downs on that drive for then ultimately the Chargers, you know, get the touchdown to go into overtime. But before that, and I'll actually jump even before that, right? The touchdown before that where the Chargers got it, what were your thoughts on when, and we know the Chargers coach is weird because he went for a fourth, I can't believe it was a fourth and one or fourth and two on his own 18.
It was
18.
Like fourth and three. Or yeah. It was like fourth and three, fourth and four.
On his own 18 in the third quarter, it was like, what are you doing? But anyways, no, the touchdown before last in regular time was when they decided to go for 2 points, and I'm scratching my head and I'm thinking like, well, if you go for 2 points now, if you don't get it, it just kind of kills any kind of like thoughts on the sideline that you're going to have a chance, because then you're down 9 points, right? And it's with little time left, you know, you're probably not going to get two possessions back. So I thought that was just weird, but they ended up getting that anyways. But what were your thoughts on that at that point, going for two instead of taking the extra point?
So I thought about that, right? Because in my head, I thought about the same thing, right? Is why put yourself in that position when you technically don't have to? I mean, I know you have to because you got to score, you know, 15 points, but why do it there versus the end of the game? And I think at the end of the game, there's more added pressure, right, than let's say in that situation. And yeah, I mean, we've already seen he's a gambler and he's going to go with his guys. And in this case, they got it. So I understood it. I mean, and they were going to have to go for it at some point. And maybe just the emotions of understanding that if we score with 20 seconds left in the game and then we have to go for 2 points, maybe our guys and our stamina, right? I mean, because those guys were beat in that fourth quarter. Those receivers and corners on both sides, they were absolutely – their routes were at such a much lower level than what they normally ran them in. So I get it. Maybe that was a factor. And let me just go for it. While we're hot, we still got time in case we have to come back from it. Let's just go get that chance now.
Right. So an incident, obviously, we're tied. So it's 29-29 going to overtime. And by now, the Steelers fans, players are probably sweating. They're like, oh, great. They end up with this tie. Obviously, both the Raiders and Chargers are going to go into the playoffs. And the Steelers, they're celebrating that they did after their game. You know, this is going to be nothing. So then the overtime starts. And obviously, it's the Raiders get the ball first. Come down with a drive, kick a field goal, 32-29. The Chargers get the ball back. And once again, fourth downs, miraculously, you know, getting them. They end up ultimately kicking the field goal, going up 32-32. So at this point, you're sitting there. I think it's around – Raiders get the ball back with, like, what, 3.5 minutes left, maybe 3 minutes to go. And at this point, I think even all of us were sitting there thinking like, all right, they'll probably, you know, maybe try to move the ball a little bit down the field. But at the end, if it's like close to like the 2 minute warning or whatnot, they're probably just going to run the ball out or knee the ball down just so that they can get a chance to get in the playoffs. Because think about this, the Raiders are at this point, yeah, it's a tie game, but they're also risking something too as well. What happens if Derek Carr throws an interception or there's a fumble? There goes their playoff chances. So they have control of their playoff destiny at this point, you know, whether they, you know, play for the tie or not. But I mean, you got to think about it. At that point, why not just kind of run the clock out? We know we have a guaranteed spot. So then we get to the point, the ultimate point where it's 38 seconds left after the Raiders ran two or three plays, or actually two runs after the 2 minute warning. And then the Chargers head coach, as I guess you could say, as bonehead as he is, at least at this point, calls a timeout. And you're thinking like, okay, this is kind of interesting because we pretty much thought they were just going to run the clock out and both teams get in the playoffs. So we didn't really understand exactly why he called that timeout. And then ultimately, you know, the Raiders kicked the field goal to win the game, to send them in the playoffs, and also the Steelers as well. But what were your thoughts there on, at least on that last drive there in overtime, or maybe some of the things that went on in the overtime?
Yeah, for me, the calling the timeout, I read it was about getting these guys prepped to make sure whatever was happening, they were prepped for, right?
Run defense. He said to make sure his good run defense was in the game there on third down.
Right. So, and I get that. So that's understandable. But it almost seemed as though the Raiders took that as, oh, so they're going to try to stop us so that they get the ball back and then go try and win the game when we're trying to make sure we both win. We tie and we both go into playoffs. So, and Derek Carr said that, right? After the game, they interviewed him and he said that the timeout changed their strategy. There's also a clip out there on Twitter where one of the Raiders players is talking to Austin Eckler from the Chargers, and he told them, we were just going to run the ball out. And Austin Eckler's like, oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, it's just we know Brandon Staley against the Chiefs. He technically took 9 points off the board by going for it, and that sparked the whole analytics debate, which it's a little silly to say that analytics – isn't factored in. Everybody uses, you should use stats and facts, right? You should use analytics not only in sports, but, you know, life. You should make decisions off of calculated risk, I guess, which Brandon Staley is doing, and every coach in the NFL does it. But then there's that part where Brandon Staley keeps, I guess, forgetting this part of, okay, but what's next? What's the human element? What benefit does going forward in this situation? And I'll go right back into, I know this is out of overtime, right? But that play that he went for it on his own 18 or whatever yard line it was, and it's 4th and 4. So here's the thing. You go for it. Let's say you go for it. Let's say you get it. It's only first down at like your own 20-something. You still have the majority of the field to go, right? So
it's like, what do you gain from that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you gain a first down, but you lose more. So that's the analytics piece that, like, I don't know if he just said, I'll forget about it, but I'm pretty sure even the numbers say don't go for it in this situation. So there's a little bit of that human – or not a little bit. There's a lot of that human element that even on that timeout, it's like, I get it. Get your run defense in to make sure you guys are good to go. So if that's his case, good. If the Raiders ended up taking it as, oh, well, they're going to stop us and they're going to try to get the ball back and win the game – well, then we're just going to go for it. So who knows, right? Only Brandon Staley and whatever he told his team, only they'll know. But we know that the Raiders' strategy changed based on that play. So, yeah, just the overall game was – it's fishy. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. They are fun to entertain. But, yeah, it was just overall fishy. Like you said, all of those fourth down plays or conversions were different. Justin Herbert's a beast. He's amazing. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But he just happened to be really, really great always on fourth down on those last two scoring drives for them. So, yeah, it's just a weird game. And at the end of the day, the Raiders said, forget this. We're going to win it. And they did. Yep.
Yeah, so on that strange side note, obviously we did have the whole conspiracy theory talk and, you know, scripted, rigged, whatever you want to call it. Even rigged was even hashtagged on Twitter, I think, at the time. Not sure. I can't remember if it was number one or at least top five, but it was. People were talking about that on Twitter. So it's always an interesting thing to talk about. Obviously, you know, at the end of the day, that game was not rigged or anything. It's just funny how the game turned out to be. But you got to think, you know, it's funny, almost like we just kind of mentioned, like, well, you know, as soon as the Chargers, you know, called the timeout, the Raiders coach was like, well, you guys don't want to go by the script, so we'll just go ahead and beat you and get in the playoffs, and you guys don't. So it's always funny things to kind of talk about that kind of stuff, for sure. So, all right, so then going into our last topic of today, we're actually going to talk about the famous Black Monday with all the, you know, NFL coaches, you know, either getting fired or let go, or, you know, ones that actually, you know, we kind of thought that maybe they were going to, you know, be gone from the organization, but didn't. So just from the ones that obviously we had found out from yesterday, was Nagy with the Bears, Zimmer with the Vikings, Van Gogh with the Broncos, who actually got let go on Sunday. And then the most interesting one was Flores from the Dolphins. Obviously they, you know, they win that first game, lose seven in a row, come back and win, you know, seven after that. That was the most surprising one, as far as, you know, let go. But at least out of those four that were, you know, let go on Sunday or Monday, who do you think probably, I guess you would say, who has the most advantage of getting a job somewhere else?
I think Brian Flores, without a doubt, will be, if it isn't this next year, he will for sure, or sorry, not this immediate future, it'll be next year for sure. I mean, he did a great job there in Miami. At the end of the day, it was a power struggle between him and the GM, and the owner sided with the GM. But I think he's one of the very few coaches that has been able to be successful from the Belichick tree. So I see Brian Flores getting a job, as a head coaching job, rather sooner than anyone else. I think Mike Zimmer, I think he's a great NFL coach. Head coaching wise, I mean, his time in Minnesota, what basically has kind of gone downhill after they missed that field goal in the playoffs. Nagy, I think it'll be a while before he gets another head coaching job. Fangio, he's a great defensive coordinator, and I think that's what he is. And we all know, let's say this has been a while, right? But Meyer probably won't coach ever in any league, right? Whether it's the NFL or NCAA. So Brian Flores should, without a doubt, be a hot number that a lot of opening teams are calling.
Yeah, well, I know you mentioned Urban Meyer as well, but even Joe Gruden, or John Gruden, I'm sorry, will be another coach that probably will never coach another team as well.
That's very true.
With what had happened earlier this year. So, very good point on Flores. Yeah, I think anybody who gets him will be a steal for them, because I think he did an excellent job at the end of the year for the Dolphins. Just kind of sad how that organization decided to go in a different direction with him, but I definitely do feel like he will land on his feet sooner than later. As far as the other coaches out there, other ones that may be coming sooner than later, we obviously know, found out yesterday, or yeah, I think it was yesterday, that David Gettleman, the general manager of the Giants, retired. Obviously, there was rumors of Joe Judge, the head coach for the Giants, being let go as well. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But I probably still expect him to go next. And then obviously, I think a couple other ones, David Coley, I think his name is, for the Texans. Obviously. He was kind of there on the radar as being let go, but I think probably how obviously it was only his first year too, but obviously the Texans probably are still looking to keep him. But was there any other names you think out there that you might see any movement from, as far as any teams that might be looking at newer head coaches or letting them go?
I mean, we've already talked about, right? Like Matt Rhule is, mm-hmm. is one that, but they, you know, one that I would. But, you know, they've already committed to him for the next year and are even looking at trading their best player. So, no, I mean, that's really it. I mean, I've talked about do you move on from Frank Wright? Because, I mean, the Colts, they were set up. I mean, and, you know, at one point, one of the teams that nobody wanted to play. They've got so much invested in Carson Wentz that they really can't do anything for the foreseeable future on that. So who knows? But, I mean, Frank Wright's a really good dude. And I think a lot of people like him. And Chris Ballard, the former Chiefs director of player personnel, really good friend of Brett Veach and worked under Reed, is the GM there. So I don't see them making any crazy decisions or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, Joe Judge, that's the next one that should. Matt Rhule, he should, but he's not. I think that's probably all the movement we will see. But, you know, who knows once – the next week plays out. There's always one team that does something super late. I hope the Texans keep David Culley with their image and what's going on with them the last 2 years. They need a coach like him. And I mean, the fact that he got them to win 5 games and almost won a 6th one this past week with a very talentless team is, you know, kind of speaks about his ability.
Right. So one final note, since we're talking about coaches and openings and whatnot, do you think this is the year that Eric the Enemy will get an actual head coaching job in this offseason?
Do I think no? Should he? Yes. I mean, there are teams like – I mean, I don't want him to go to the Dolphins, but, man, he would be a good fit for them. Because their problems are offensive, right? Like, Brian Flores, he's a defensive coach, had the defense doing well. Tua was doing well. That offensive line is pretty bad. That would be a good fit for him. But like I said, for his coaching career, I wouldn't want him to go to Miami because I don't want anyone to go there. Vikings would be a great pick, right? Imagine him working with Kirk Cousins and on all those wide receivers and running back. Bears, he's got Justin Fields. Broncos, I hope not, even though that's the team that had requested
an interview with. Yeah.
The Jags, man, that would be a really good setup for him because it's a new team with, you know, the best quarterback prospects since Andrew Luck. In Trevor Lawrence. They have a lot of money to build. They'll have the first overall pick. So that would be really cool. He'd get a lot of control, I think, and you know, hopefully make some personnel decisions. But they've decided to keep their GM as well, and a lot of Jaguars fans are not happy with that. So to answer your question, I don't think he will. I think, man, he's just going to hang around Kansas City until, you know, let's say Andy Reid retires, or it's just some offer that comes up that is like you can't pass up on. But I hope he does, because we all know that's what Andy Reid does, right? Is he gets his good coaches in good spots.
Right. I have the same feeling as well. I really hope he does, but I don't think he does it in the day as well. I just don't think that spot right now is something, or any spots that are open right now or might even come open with some of the ones we've mentioned already, are actually like just something you can't pass up on, right? I feel like they're good situations or scenarios that he could possibly go to. I just don't think they're the right one that like will be like, you know, blow away him as far as wanting to come to coach their team. And I agree with you as well. I mean, I obviously would hope that once the day Andy Reid decides to move on, that he'll be your coach. I just don't think, you know, this time goes on. Obviously, it doesn't seem like Andy Reid's one to slow down coaching at least anytime soon, unless, you know, something happens. Maybe when, you know, there's Super Bowl or whatever, and he's like, okay, I'm done, you know, that kind of thing. But I'd like to keep Eric the Enemy as long as we can and have him as our next head coach. But, you know, who knows? But the more and more time goes on, I think he'll find a spot somewhere else before that happens.
Definitely. And watch him get announced as, like, new head coach of the – Broncos at the end of the week.
Oh man, that would be awful. I mean, like I said, good for him, but to have him in our own division, knowing all the stuff that we do and everything, man, that would be terrible. But obviously, it'd be good for him for sure. All right, so for that will be actually all that we have time for today. Later this week, we will break down our wild card playoff game, which is Sunday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. As the Chiefs look to end up retiring, or I guess you could say Big Ben, for his last NFL game here in Kansas City at Arrowhead. I was going to ask you going to that, or plan on going to that game, or what's your?
Yeah, the plan is to definitely You know, game day, I always end up changing, so we'll see.
Right. So, yeah, so that's going to be a pretty good marquee game. I'm pretty sure that's why the NFL wanted to put that on Sunday Night Football with Big Ben, you know, like I said, being his last game, and Chiefs at Arrowhead, why not being a night game? So, yeah, we'll talk about more about that later this week. So thanks again for everybody listening. Don't forget to follow our podcast, and go Chiefs!